Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the sick motherfuckers at sea. Welcome to another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Tonight, we've got a very special episode lined up for you, because tonight we're taking a look at a movie about three girls who go to a rock music festival, wreck their car, and wind up staying in a spooky old house. What spooky old house, you say? That spooky old house. That's right, we're down at the Pittock Mansion where they shot Unhinged. Why don't you check out the trailer and we'll be back in a second.
It began as an idyllic weekend outing, but something went wrong. Stranded, alone, or are they?
Man, something really weird is going on around here.
And that was Unhinged. Unhinged. And here Unhinged. We are at the actual mansion where they shot the whole movie at.
In a mansion like this, where they shot the movie, you get some really high production value out of this place. It's huge. It's got sweeping staircase. It's got lots of rooms.
And so when you set a horror movie in a place like this, yeah, you're going to look good. So we should probably tell them a little bit about the movie before we get into it.
Is that what we're supposed to
do? That's what we're supposed
about?
To be doing here. Right. My bad. So it starts out with the three teenage-ish girls, late teens, early 20s.
Yeah.
And the movie starts out really weird because it rolls the credits over black, and then the credits stop rolling, and you just have silence.
And then you hear a radio alarm.
But before you get to the radio alarm, it's just like this long stretch of nothing. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, wait a second, did the DVD go wrong?
That's what
Is
I thought.
There something wrong
yeah.
here? But no, it was just a weird directorial choice.
And actually, I think in that element for what it is, it worked well.
And then you get the radio ad playing.
Oh, that's just funny. For the people here in the Pacific Northwest where the restaurant chain Taco Time is a mainstay, right out of the gate, you get a radio commercial for Taco Time.
An old vintage 1982 jingle that we all remember. And I'm like, I remember that ad. So that was awesome. Yes. Taco Time gets a thank you in the credits. So the three girls, they're going to a music concert, a jazz concert or something
kind of
like
festival.
That. A festival of some sort. And so they get into their car and you start driving around and there's like the dudes spend a little bit of money because there's this aerial shot that they're driving along one of the bridges in Portland.
Yeah.
And they start going up into the hills, up into the mountains.
And there is something that's odd about this. The car it's a Russian car that was never imported into the United States commercially. So it's like, where did he get that car?
Being the nature of a low-budget movie, almost inevitably it's like, hey, we need a car. What do you got? Hey, I got this old Russian beater that I'm not using that we can roll.
Yeah, that could be it. He was just looking for something old to destroy, and it turned out to be a Russian car.
So yeah, so they're driving up into the mountains.
And they were about to hit something and swerve to the side of the road, and they skid off-road a bit.
Yeah, because it's pouring down rain, and there's a log or something in the road, and they freak out and crash into a ditch.
And one of the girls gets slightly hurt. The other two are more or less all right, but the other one is injured enough where she's almost incapacitated.
No, she is incapacitated.
She's incapacitated, and she's non-responsive, and spends the majority of the movie not talking.
And so then the movie goes to black. They wake up in a little room somewhere up in the mansion somewhere where, what happened? And you meet the other characters of the piece. You get Marion Penrose, an older spinster. She's probably about 40, 50-ish or so.
I'd say 50s.
50-ish. And the groundskeeper. And they're like, what happened? And it's like, you had a wreck. You're fine. Everything's fine. But why don't you stay for a little bit because the road's washed out and it's raining like cats and dogs.
And it's 2 miles to town.
That's one of the things that the movie really gets right, is that they managed to make this in the middle of town, because you can see all the people wandering around behind us. They managed to make it really feel isolated.
At a gaze from here looking at downtown Portland, it is about 2 miles away, actually.
But they make it sound impenetrable. It's like, you can't go through these woods. It's too dense and everything. You'd never make it. You get lost.
From there on, you meet the other person of the piece. And that would be Mrs. Penrose. She doesn't have a first name as far as we know. And she's this wheelchair-bound, very old man-hater.
She laments about men quite a bit, especially her husband.
Late husband.
Apparently, the late husband wound up running off with, like, a young hot thing. And so she pretty much just absolutely hates all men. Uniformly. Which is weird because the groundskeeper is a man, but I guess she doesn't really interact with him.
Yeah.
She interacts more with Marion.
And it's quite pointedly that while he's a trusted employee, he's not welcome either. But, yeah.
And he's a rather sympathetic character.
Yeah.
And he's one that helps, you know, and communicates the best with women.
So they're all saying, well, you know, the road's washed out. It's really raining. Why don't you stay here overnight, maybe, you know, through tomorrow? We'll take care of you. And when the road is cleared up and the rain stops, you can go get your car out of the ditch.
Yeah, they spend a lot of time sitting around tables talking about what happened, about the situation in the mansion, you know, about being isolated, basically.
And the girls, are given leave to raid the mansion's wardrobe, and they find themselves, they're actually in period-looking evening ball gowns, almost.
Either that or they pulled the Thurston Howell III and brought along, you know, all this luggage for a tour for it.
Yeah. It's like, why are they going to a rock concert in 19th century dresses? No, they got the dresses at the house, which is not a bad thing. It's just that they pretty much are in the same outfit for the movie.
Oh, now, we're pretty cavalier about spoilers in this series, but the ending spoiler, if it really sells the movie for me.
Yes.
So if you have any inclination whatsoever to watch this movie, for God's sake, stop now, go watch the movie and come back, because the spoiler at the end is actually a pretty good kicker.
Basically, there is one place on the grounds nobody can go. It's this locked room. It's like a storage locker. And one of the women tries to go there and is stopped by, I believe, Marion. Says, never go in there.
Yeah, she says that the timbers are rotting and don't go in there because it's not safe.
Yeah.
Ironically, the cabin that she says don't go into and is unsafe and unhealthy and where they keep the monster locked up is the ticket booth to get into this place.
Nice. So basically, yeah. At one point in the movie, one of the women, the last girl, she's wandering about trying to find a way to get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Gets into the room, which is filled with, ta-da,
dead bodies.
Not only dead bodies, but body parts. And there's a locket or something in a jar that falls over onto the ground. So she knows that both her friends have been brutally murdered. And then in comes this guy that she'd seen before in the house standing outside her window.
Yeah, she sees him a couple of times in outside the window. There's some motion. There's this one time where they're in the bedroom and they're relaxing and they hear breathing and somebody beating off.
And there's these multiple shots of somebody, you don't see their eye, looking through this hole in a picture or something like that, and the heavy breathing. So you know this person's going to show up sooner or later. And eventually does. At the end, when she's in this room, opens the door, and ta-da, Mountain Man. He chases her out of the room, into the house, upstairs. She's screaming like a banshee, in which she'd done more than once. Gets all the way upstairs to the attic, where she gunned. Which has been fully loaded and has been front-loaded into this movie, more or less.
It's an old antique that she finds earlier in the movie up in the attic.
Yeah.
And she also finds a big machete and a couple of other weird artifacts up there.
So this doesn't come as any surprise when she pulls this son of a bitch and
blows away Mountain Man.
I mean, straight, dead shot in the forehead, over. Marion comes in, freaks the hell out, says, "What are you doing? Oh my God, he was just playing. He was just playing with you."
And she's all like, "He was trying to kill me. There's a pile of dead bodies in the ticket booth to get in here."
Red herring.
And that's when it turns out, the spoiler of the movie, that Marion is not a chick, but a dude. And then Marion just starts wailing on her with the machete and just absolutely just fucking just savage blood everywhere. And then, so Mrs. Penrose, all throughout the movie, has been saying, "I hear a man in here." She's been always accusing Marion of, "You have a man in here. You're bringing men into the house. I don't like that." And then, after Marion has just hacked the hell out of the third girl, you hear Mrs. Penrose downstairs saying, "Marion, do you have another man up there? Is there a man up there?" And you hear her slip back into the female voice, "No, Mom, there's no man up here." Roll in credits.
Yeah.
A lot of people compare this movie to The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I can kind of sort of see that, but I would compare this movie to The Rocky Horror Picture Show and Psycho.
I would like to point out that there's another movie that this really plays into. The location totally isn't it, but the thread of the killer, Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah. A little bit of Sleepaway Camp sprinkled on top of Psycho and the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
Without all the transvestites from the... Oh, wait, actually, I suppose, my bad. No, this did have a transvestite in it, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Let's dissect the movie a little bit then. What did you think of the acting?
Honestly, and I know you guys loved the old woman. I thought she was kind of really just like a stage actress that had gotten her first part. And it shows.
Yeah.
Because she's very, very stagey.
Yeah. But the one thing that comes with that is that her acting experience.
I don't care. It just comes off as stilted.
Well, I know it comes across as stilted, but it's got the reserved delivery that somebody with experience would have, whereas all the girls, are lame. They're paper cutouts.
The only person in the movie that I thought was worth any of a damn was the groundskeeper.
I'm going to counter your, it was really kind of stilted and staged and really felt really weird. I thought the really weird disconnect of the acting was what sold it for me. It was this weird, ethereal, these people have been so isolated that they're a little touched in the head.
They're out of touch with society.
So yeah, I won't deny that it was a very stilted, very weird performance, but the weird, stilted performance sold it for me. You won't get any pushback on me, however, from the girls. I did not like the girls.
Yeah, they were, like I said, they were cardboard. They weren't even cardboard. They were more like particle board.
One of them doesn't really show up in the movie at all. So you have three girls, but one of them gets injured in the car wreck, and they take her and put her in a bed, and you don't really see her for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
She's just kind of convalescing, so it's only two girls and the two old women.
Yeah, they mainly talk about her, though, when the other two girls are, showering and stuff like that together or whatever, and they talk about her, and she's been kind of sidelined that entire time. I mean, you can get the basic tension, but I know that there's no more than that, just the basic, oh, God, we got to get out of here, we got to get our friend and hit the road type of deal.
Yeah.
I think the writer/director, whoever, just didn't know what to do with her once he sidelined her.
really, the convalescing one, her only purpose in the movie is to get killed by an axe to the head.
Yeah, that really, that saddened me the first time I saw it. The second time I saw it, it still saddened me.
So you mentioned a little bit earlier the crazy production value that you would get out of a location like this.
Mm.
This is an astounding location. And you could tell that Don Rundquist had a good eye for production. Because, we've gone in here and we've shot some B-roll. And it's a very gorgeous house, but it's a very flatly lit, it looks like a mansion. In the movie, however, you look at the staircase and just these beams of light just kind of illuminating little splashes of it. Now, some of it is an artifact of the DVD print being a little dark and muddy, and some of it is that he knew what he was doing with the lighting.
Obviously, the lighting tech, knew his stuff and managed to create some really good atmosphere. Just some outright creepiness, especially when the final girl is being chased by the brother, into the house. I mean, it's like, don't go in there. You don't expect her to run upstairs. Just get the hell out of Dodge. And it's really, reminds me of Phantasm, actually, where Michael gets chased by the tall man and just, poof, they're off and running.
A little bit, yeah, I can see that. Or then you have something like the exterior, where it's pretty much this angle, and you have the left side of the balcony and the right side of the balcony with just these two spotlights on it and just a little periphery illuminating the house.
So they did a good job of making this place look isolated and creepy, even in close-up, with some of the details sticking out more than others. It looks really rustic, that kind of rustic Americana you get with some older architecture. And then you come here today, and it's nice and well-lit. It is classic looking. It doesn't look sleazy. That's one thing about the movie. That place looks
sleazy as hell. Sleazy as fuck, man.
Oh my god.
The other thing that I think the movie really gets right, I love the soundtrack. It's this weird, kind of not quite Henry Manfredini synth, but it kind of is, and it's this weird Casio keyboard synth.
Yeah.
And it really, it's kind of heavy-handed, but I really liked it.
Yeah, well, that was kind of the de rigueur thing in those days. Everybody was using those synths. Devo was using them. It's just definitely, you can tell, an artifact of its time by a lot of the music and the other stuff combined in a particular way. And this is very standard from that time. So it definitely has that contiguous feel between movies of its type. Like The Burning or whatever, something like that.
It's a little more heavy-handed than Emerson did for The Burning. So it's not quite as,
I'm just using a generic.
But it does have a similar feel to it if it's a little more amateurish.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the whole thing about the movie, is it's a pretty amateurish production. I mean, the dude did one movie and then, produced a couple of things 20 years down the line.
Yeah. More on my not being happy about the girls and their unnatural behavior is that when they're interacting with one another, they seem to, their conversation wanders around a bit, but it's never worrying about their friend who is incapacitated and out of the picture. They don't go to the room periodically to check up. They don't, show, you would think that they would at least get an insert shot of them, hey, all right, she's still out, okay, fine. But
they mentioned that they go visit her once, and then after the one girl walks off to town, the third girl goes and checks on her, and that's after the murder, and they don't find her, and that's the catalyst for the end of the movie. Yeah. So they do kind of, but it's not very... Yeah, you just kind of forget about the girl.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, there's a third one, is how I felt about it.
Well, yeah, if you're counting your chickens... she does get sidelined, but I always thought that was meant to kind of build up the tension, even though I kind of went a little overboard, I think, with it keeping her off screen so damn long.
I can see what you're saying, but there wasn't any, for me, there wasn't any tension building, other than this is getting boring.
One of the areas that the movie falls down for me, okay, you guys have your two nitpicks to pick on. The one area that the movie absolutely falls down on is the editing. There are instances, so we mentioned the kind of weird credits into black into the opening of the movie and this long stretch. We'll dismiss that one as kind of a style. But then there's other instances where, the shot has obviously ended, but they keep rolling and keep rolling and keep rolling. And so
Don Rundquist may have had a good idea, but his editor was fighting against him and not cutting appropriately.
Well, that, and they might have been using trims as filler. They were padding the thing out to running time that was, you know, to,
you know, that
with
could
the
be
other movies.
Get it up to movie length. It's a pretty short movie. It's like an hour and 19.
Yeah, it's a little over 81 minutes.
Yeah, so it's a pretty short movie. And it could have trimmed, if they had trimmed it back down to maybe about 70 minutes.
75 minutes.
75 minutes, I think it would have been a much stronger movie.
He was too fixated on his progression of where he was going. So he starts leaving it run so he can pad the length out when he could have just written a new scene to insert.
They could have developed the girls a little bit more. You really, none of the characters, aside from Mrs. Penrose, who gets a lot of backstory with her husband, you don't really get a lot of character development on the three girls. They're pretty much just flesh bags wandering through the scene.
It's like, actually have the two girls visit their friend, and she's awake. Have them, what happened to me? Oh, there was a car accident where, you know, Penrose, you know, have the gal come in. Exchange, you know, we can have lunch in here today with your friend. You know, have her go through the motions of trying to get out of bed and can't. You know, something more there, and that would have given the movie more volume.
Or the beginning of the movie, you meet the first girl, and she's on her phone, the phone to her mother. Mm. And you can almost but not quite hear the mother's side of the conversation as he's talking. And mother says, I don't like these girls. I don't think you should go. There's been trouble up in the hills. There's people missing, that sort of thing. I would have gotten that off the phone and maybe had her interact with mom a little bit, maybe fleshed up her character a little bit.
That requires another actor.
Fair point.
Physically in
Fair
front of
point.
The camera. And it's more than likely the voice of the mother was probably an assistant with no acting ability.
Okay, now that's a fair point.
You can pull off the voice, but can't pull it off in front of the camera.
They might have been intending to do more with that whole thing of people missing and didn't have the money to do it, possibly.
Because the most we get out of that is that as they're driving up to the mansion before they wreck the car, you hear, they've got the radio playing, and you hear, you know, this just in, another mass murder has been heard up in the hills, or something like that.
Yeah, and then there's all the body parts in that room. And I was under the assumption there were multiple people. And you've got the friend who's, I guess, hanging or something like that, the one who'd been axed.
Yeah.
And then you've got the, you know, various pieces of, like, the locket or whatever that fell to the ground in the jar. So, obviously, there must have been a number of people had been chopped up and put in that thing as a kind of a reference back to that whole thing of people being murdered.
Well, if Marion has been dropping her kayfabe and talking as a man, and enough of that Mrs. Penrose is hearing a man in the house, obviously she is, every time she murders somebody, she starts talking like a dude. So that's probably where that's coming from.
Yeah. Yeah, that actually makes sense. That would explain why the mother would be convinced that there's men in the house.
One of two things that I found interesting was the lack of any connection between the murders and, in general, and any true motivation. I mean, why are there murders going on? They never really specify anything other than the mother hates men. So maybe most of the people that have been killed were boys, possibly.
My take is, and it seems to me that the bulk of the murders have been women.
It was really hard to tell the pile of dead bodies what gender they were because, A, it's kind of shot in this weird shaky style, and then there's, it's hard to tell what the murders are.
All right.
So you got anything else left you got to say? All right. Okay, say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Marion Gracie.
So, Ashley, mi amigo, did you like Unhinged?
It was all right. I mean, if you take away the deleterious effect of some of the really bad acting, it was okay. I didn't love it. I didn't like it, so I'm on the fence. Basically, kind of a meh.
You know, I'm not going to fault anyone who kind of looks at this movie and says, man, fuck that movie. Because it is a very slow burn. It is a very plodding, methodical, not like an 80s slasher movie at all. So I'm not going to fault anybody for that point of view. Do you like it?
It's an okay film. The fact that the mother, basically, and that actress's abilities upstage everybody else.
Oh, the old woman, old Mrs. Pendleton, was the MVP of the movie, hands down.
Yeah. you know, her acting experience was very evident. The others aren't bad. It just, there's just a little bit of unnatural to it. The girls don't do what you would expect them to do. And I'm not saying that the movie should have been predictable. I'm just saying their interaction with one another seemed to be all of the focus. And their friend who is incapacitated is nothing more than a passing thought.
All right, no, that's fair enough. I mean, the script has some issues. Yeah. I won't deny that. When I watched it the first time, I'm like, oh, man, I do not like this movie. And then I had to watch it again because I don't know why, but I wound up watching it a second time. I'm like, okay, this is kind of warming on me. When I watched it a third time for this episode, mm-hmm. I'm like, I actually kind of really enjoyed it. I wouldn't say it was a classic of the genre, but I really liked it.
It's got a good solid idea.
Yeah, it's got some good production value, good solid idea. It's a little ropey in places, but yeah, it's. I'm going to give it a very enthusiastic-y thumbs up.
I'm a thumb out. Like that?
That's fair enough. Okay, so meh, I liked it.
Yeah.
All right, that sounds like a winner-ish. Not a waste of your time?
Not a waste of time.
Not a waste of time. So, the question for you gentlemen is, should Unhinged have been on the Video Nasty list?
No.
You know, with a limited cast of characters, it's not a very high body count, but the very last murder up in the attic was really fucking savage.
Well, yeah.
I could see why that might twig some people.
Yeah.
Well, the axe to the head was pretty bad, but it was off screen, but the reveal is kind of nasty.
All right, so off the list, off the list, off the list. And we'll catch you next time.
Okay, then.
All right, then. Alrighty then, that's our thoughts on Unhinged. Look at this, I'm in the mansion. I'm about to get murdered to death. But assuming that I don't get murdered to death, why don't you join us again here next week when me, Jeff, and Ian, we're going to take a look at a double dose of The Shat and Michael Ironside in Visiting Hours. Assuming I'm also not dead and slumped over on a keyboard somewhere, why don't you drop us an email, thevideonastyproject@gmail.com, and we'll catch you next week. Stay evil.